Another riveting episode of Never Ending Adventure, and I'm your NPR host, DJ Nettie P.
And I'm Russell Tindall, your other co-host of this podcast. How's it going, y'all?
I thought I'd go in with the soft intro because we are doing an episode all about the soft lands of Pillowland. Do we want to call it Pillowland, or do we want to call it?
I think it's Pillow World. Is what it is officially called. Okay. I wish I could bring a similar energy, Ned. Unfortunately, I've got a new segment for you. We would start this out with a new segment.
Okay.
By the way, this is an Adventure Time podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about Puhoi. Puhoi, but this is called Podcast Confessions. That's my new segment.
My podcast confession
is that I told my fiance a joke the other day and she didn't even laugh, dude.
Now you've just been festering on it for too long.
I've been festering on it and I you know how like those negative thoughts just start to build and they build and they build and then you just go down this rabbit hole and then all of a sudden I'm like, is she laughing at some other guy's jokes? Which she's not. Right, like she's not, but yeah, that's where I'm at today.
I feel you.
Maybe
all jokes maybe aside, would you consider yourself a festerer? Like in general, are you a festerer?
Am I a festerer? I am a overthinker. So probably so. I spend too much time on things, and I'm one to overanalyze conversations and how did that go? How did they think? How are they perceiving me based off of, you know, like, so I would say yes, unfortunately. I'm a fan in this episode as much as I don't want to be. But I think this episode brings a lot of really good lessons and thoughts and like a different mindset that is hard to follow. But I think we will try our best to not just like over drill into it. But we got some deep themes in this episode. And I know I'm coming off low at the beginning of this podcast, but let me just crank it up a little bit. Let me just get a little bit more excited. Y'all, great episode. I'm so excited to talk about this episode.
I was so pumped
that I reacted to it on the Patreon. So for those that are members of the Patreon, the lovelies, the sexies of all of you listeners, they'll get to hear me reacting to the first time to Puhoi, which I'll just be honest, Neb, me and Allie, it's mostly just me. I just thought way too much about body pillows and about the flesh pillow part of this episode. And I do apologize. So if you listen to it on the Patreon, there's going to be a lot of good goofs.
Good gifts.
I hope you enjoy it.
Sharp pillows. Like, yeah, but it'd be funny to think about like what's our universe? Are we all carbon? What's our universe? And so it's just like, oh yeah, like my digital pocket carbon, my wall carbon, and we just start calling everything like versions of carbon that it actually is. My microphone carbon.
I just hate flesh pillow. It just really got to me thinking about Finn as a flesh pillow and thinking about Finn having babies with a pillow. And I started to fester on it and I probably shouldn't have.
I think that's a face value type Adventure Time moment that we really just need to take. We don't really need to dig too deep into that.
No, I mean, it's probably true. You know, they're living human being or not human beings but pillow beings and
sentient pillow beings.
But anyways, man, no, I'm pumped to talk about this episode. I think it's an important one. I think the presence of a certain goal immediately puts it into a category. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time in Adventure Time that we come across Gulb. We've met Glob.
We kind of know they also like, oh my grod, oh my glob, but like the Gulb's kind of the opposite of that. Now I think there's an instance though, we've already seen the Lich several times, and I think that we have gotten the fact that Lich says he's like, I'm the last scholar of Gulb. So we have heard the name before, but seen. So I think in this instance, just putting it back into context, yeah, the gold appearance is not necessarily more than just a really trippy dream sequence, taken at face value, like taken at when this appeared. We didn't have all the context of the end of the show and the gold from
true
from Fiona and Cake and everything like that.
But so we have to take it back to this, right?
Yeah, we have to take it back to a little bit of face value. We can't necessarily, we can pick up important parts, but I don't think we should like lean too much on. Oh yeah, but well, this is an important
I'm still
going to
theorize
episode.
About it though. Yeah. We're going to theorize about Gold's
appearance. Yes, we will absolutely. I'm going to save
you
that for the
you
end.
Can't not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that this is an important one. I think that even was a great reason why you reacted on the Patreon to it is because this is only one of the two Adventure Time episodes that have ever won an Emmy.
So
this one and Wizards cool. Only Fools are the only two that have ever actually, there's a lot of nominations out there, but this one's actually one of the two that have won an Emmy. So that's like really cool.
That is
just
really
from
cool.
Storyline. I would say from an artistic perspective, again, kind of putting in it like, it's got to be incredibly clever to design a world where you've got pillows and blankets and you have to design everything out of that without it looking just like a mass heap of, I don't know, animated bedding, you know?
It was beautifully drawn. And that was one of the first things I noticed. I love the palette that they chose for this. Mm-hmm. I love as soon as he gets into the portal and he walks through that door and you open up on this valley and it's just awesome. The sky is a pillow, like everything mm-hmm. about
the,
it.
The sun's
fluffy.
Like a little sewn in button on there. Like,
yeah. It's so wonderfully drawn. And it was definitely not breathtaking, but it was something where I was like, this is up there with the evening scenes, the dusk scenes of Adventure mm-hmm. Time for me. Like this is definitely one that I really appreciated. Yeah. Like it felt like I was living in a children's book. Like it really felt like we were like in I'm trying to think back on like one of the children's books like from my childhood. But anyways, I was living in a world.
Yeah, where like the Richard Scarry books had like a certain aesthetic to them. The Very Hungry Caterpillar had that like certain aesthetic there.
Yes,
where
yes, yes. You
something
know exactly
like
what
warming
I'm talking about.
And comforting about it. Yeah.
Yeah, or the fish with all the scales, like something.
I always forget the name of that
Rainbow
book.
Scales.
That's I think it's just called like, the Rainbow Fish or something like that. Well, that's part of everyone's childhood.
Yeah, this is a really good transition, actually. Let's go into another story. That this story, Puhoi, is supposedly kind of based off of, or there's a references to, is certainly a very similar plot that I wanted to bring up before we got too deep into this mm-hmm. episode. It's a traditional Chinese story called The World Inside a Pillow. Ned, I don't know if you've looked mm-hmm. into this a little bit. Okay, so
I saw face value, and I'd say, I mean, somewhat ancient being. The Tang Dynasty was like where this mm-hmm. story came out of, which is 618 to 907 AD, which is, I mean, that's very, very long ago.
Too. It is old. But I have a synopsis of a synopsis, basically, of the story, mm-hmm. so we can have a little bit of, let's lay the groundwork, and then we'll build off of that into, and probably go on many tangents throughout this podcast. I don't know how long this is going to be. I'm sorry, y'all.
That's fine,
just so much here, and I love it. And there's a moment later on in this episode that I've almost teared up writing once or twice. So, wild. I don't want to, they may not happen. I hope it doesn't happen. I don't want to cry. But anyways, so we'll get into this. So the traditional Chinese story, The World Inside a Pillow, it's about basically this guy who is wishing for a much more prestigious life than he actually has, right? Like he's talking to this monk, and the monk at the end of their conversation hands him a pillowcase, and he sleeps on it that night and goes into this dream. And within the dream, he lives, I don't know, say like a quote unquote, like a honorable life, like in quotations, right? Like he lives this life where he's helping out like their emperor in a time of war, and he has just like all the money that he wanted, a beautiful wife, all those things. And then he ends up being betrayed and imprisoned by those underneath him or around him, just because of jealousy or whatever it was. And then the man dies in the dream and wakes up, and with the monk, And the monk claims that dreams, or what says the happiness of human life, are all like a dream. So everything that is wonderful in life, especially in a past tense view, can feel like a dream or is a dream. And I'm sure there's more to that, but that's essentially what I've taken out of it. But what do you have on A World Inside a Pillow?
I mean, that's about the factual aspects of that from like the original story. But obviously that's also, it being such a old story, that is a commonly, I think, used like story theme of, okay, like what would happen if, I mean, we see it in blatantly as like the Chronicles of Narnia, like Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where they go into the wardrobe and they have this magical, fantastical like world where they not only are introduced to a lot of things that are new, but they're forced into situations where, because of the way the world is set up, that they are forced to either learn or grow or adapt in ways that the outside world would not let them do it. So like, you know, this one, it's like Finn almost, he doesn't have to worry about pretty much all of the things he worries about, and ooh, and multiple girls and really dangerous traps and Jake, his brother. Like there's a lot of dynamics here, and he kind of gets to pretty much just live this life where he focuses on being a good father and getting back home. Like nothing really else matters. And same with the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Those kids, they go into this magical world. They have to be like kings and queens, essentially. And then they grow up in this world where I guess they're a little bit more powerful, influential, whatever you want to kind of name it, like honorable, like you said in the original story. And then they get thrust back into their old lives with this new perspective. And I think that that's kind of the concept of the important part of the story is that you're thrust back immediately where you were at, where you were lacking something or there was some immature aspect of yourself. And then you've just gained it from an outside perspective that has zero harm or zero consequences, I should say, of this, your actual world. Like, again, Finn kind of forgets at the end of this episode.
Finn totally forgets. I was going to say that's the difference between both of those stories and this story is that Finn has a total lapse of memory and just like a dream. I mean, that's what happens with dreams, right? Like, I'll have the most vivid, most like incredible dream one day and within like an hour when I'm trying to retell it at work or whatever, which don't ever retell dreams. It's never as interesting as there were talked about that on the podcast before. It's never as interesting as you think it was or it was to you. Forget details, forget moments, forget why it was important to you.
But you bring up a really good point though, because if you think about, you know, like dreams happen incredibly quick, but like it's all, you know, your brain firing like REM sleep cycle and it happens so quickly that like you're bound to forget it. But if you think about it, when time lapses, like I can't tell you what I did every day of my first semester of college. Like there's like little aspects of it, but the further you get away from that, the more it gets distorted. And that's kind of shown in this episode as well.
Yeah. In a much quicker sense, really.
When he goes back and recounts Jake and he's like, I can't really remember what he said. I can't really remember what he looks like. It's like, you know, 50 years beyond that point, you know, or whatever it is. And that's, I think that's kind of the similar thing of like the dream aspect of like, you know, is our whole life just a dream? If you give it enough, if you give it 200 or 300 years from now, would you remember anything about college or anything about high school and growing up and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy to me. And I've got something written down, a little note just says, fleeting memories like dreams, like you're saying, essentially. I mean, the past feels like such a thing that like almost didn't exist. Like I feel like constantly like the present is fleeting and the past is this hazy memory that feels like it happened just yesterday, even though I can't remember everything about it. Like I hate that. I feel like that's a part of getting older as time goes on and you've lived more than 5 years within your, I'm going to say your living memory, a thing that I don't know if that's a legitimate phrase or the scientific phrase for that, but You know, you, I think you know exactly what I'm saying when I say living memory, yeah. right? Like yeah, after yeah, yeah. 6 years old, you know, like yeah. the memory that is like legitimate and not just, and even though I say legitimate, like all memories are kind of fragments of what they actually were, or fragments of like what truly happened. There's a reason why like memories can't truly be taken for certain. I was going to say in a court of law, I don't truly know that. I'm not a lawyer, but it is very fascinating that, Finn has this moment where he's misremembering Jake and everything that Jake said, as you said. And I actually have it written down. And since we're talking about it, let's go ahead and get into this moment mm-hmm. where he had just talked to the Oracle, right? Like he's on top of the Abracadabra Mountains. Rashida has this newspaper from the future, which
yeah,
that's kind of wild to me. And yeah, there's this implication that Finn has spent the past... And this is where I'll say like bad father moment, right? He mm-hmm. spent the early part of the first time skip. You see him, he's a little bit older. He's this incredible dad. He's out like cutting down a tree with his sharp pillow and yeah. punting the yeah. shit well, out of sheep.
Yeah, insert that was my tops of the episode. He's like, oh, sheep, yeah, you're as stupid as you are fluffy and just boots the sheep. So just, definitely my tops yeah. of the episode.
It's great. It's great. And he's this awesome dad, and they bring him food, and he throws his daughter up in the air, you know, and, mm-hmm. and his kids are named Jay and Bonnie, which I believe is also the name of two of his kids, and Fiona and Cake, if I'm not misremembering that. I know Jay is the boy.
Yeah.
Jay's definitely the boy. I'm not sure if there was Bonnie, but I think there was. But anyways, he's this great dad. And then we have this time skip, and it's implied that like he's like, yeah, I really want to go home to the Oracle. He's spent the past 30 years after... Rosalind's dad. I would say
maybe a little less though, because if you look at his kids, they had to have been like five yeah, and six. And then
but he just looks so much older. Like, I think that's yeah. why I gave it a third. And he says decades. He's searched for decades, but I really don't yeah. think he was searching that hard, or if at all, until Quilton gave him or presented the Pillownomicon mm-hmm. to him, right? And then all of a sudden he goes on this journey, and you see it in Rosalind's face. Where she clearly is distressed when he has this, yeah. oh my gosh, I got to find this door. Like, do you have more information about this? And so they're on top of this mountain, and he just has this conversation with this Oracle and Rosalind, who is without a doubt, I don't know if she's yours, Ned, but she is without a doubt my lovely of this episode. She's fantastic. Once you get past that first moment with them.
Yeah. Well, my notes were she comes on a little strong.
She comes on strong. She's flirtatious. She doesn't know.
She's flirtatious. And I think, well, the whole like the moment when he's like, oh, yeah, in my world, pillows and sheets are used as bedding. And she's like, they are here too, silly. And he blushes. And I was like, yeah. that's a future sex joke, you know?
It's a nice little innuendo. I thought that was a very funny moment. And no, I don't know if that was my top.
I've got a more funny lovely. She's the best character yeah. in this episode. But, and to what I imagine that you're about to say too, and yeah. correct me if this is your same thoughts here, is that like it is an incredibly selfless kind of love that she mentions. I always knew that you were gonna have the pursuit and have the want and have the desire to go and find your past world. And she's always been supportive of it. Despite the fact that now yeah. they have children, that they spent the better part of what I would consider probably a decade to maybe two decades
yeah.
In search of this door. And that obviously their family's on some sort of family backpacking guru Himalayan
adventure
trip.
For Finn, right.
Exactly. Yeah. At that last moment when she cries and she's like, you're so close, like, all I want for you is to be happy and to not forget us. You need to promise yeah. me you won't forget us. And I was like, that's the beautiful moment, is that she is still, despite all of this and them getting finally this close to finding the door, that she still is doing it because she does truly love Finn. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, that's I think it's the festering
is she your lovely?
Aspect.
It sounds like she's your lovely as well.
my lovely is the pillow chef that that cooks up the little baby pillows.
Well, Ned took my lovely, even though it's not his lovely. That quote is just so sad. She's crying and she literally just goes, just promise me you'll remember us when you're back in your real life. And that's mm-hmm. kind of where I wanted to move on from that. It's just a very sweet moment. And I think you put it beautifully where like she literally has done nothing but support him mm-hmm. for like all of their relationship, especially once he gets on this kick of like, I gotta freaking find my way back home mm-hmm. and, you know, to the people I loved. And that brought up some interesting thoughts in my mind, but I do want to quote Jake real fast and the misremembrance that Finn has about Jake, where Jake is off-putting, or not off-putting, but he doesn't look like Jake, right? He looks a little different.
A little grosser looking version of Jake.
Yeah. It's like, you're getting all hung up on imaginary problems. Stay with your new wife. And he says it in a voice even that's not the Jake voice mm-hmm. exactly. And then he goes on to say, you've known her longer now than any of us. You're not even sure I really even existed. And I'm pretty sure I don't look like this. And so I don't have much notes about this. So this is kind of just me going off the dome. But it did make me think about like present time spent with mm-hmm. like Allie per se or something like that. Like I, she's my fiance, like we're in love and all this stuff and we're getting married and I'm going to spend the rest of my life with her. But presently I haven't spent as much time with her. I've known her for 4 years as I have with other people. So I think there are times, and I say other people, I mean like family or like my best friends from childhood or whatever. Right. And so there's a feeling of like home sometimes still feels like, oh, I miss Georgia. I miss this thing, but there mm-hmm. will come a time, especially if we stay in Nashville. And I will say it's already happening. Like me and Allie have lived together for a year and a half. Like this feels like home now.
Yeah.
For
like,
sure.
We're just really cozy with her, like being with yeah. her specifically totally. Is the aspect that's the cozy and the warmth and the home
and,
feeling.
And I think I'm justified. And I think we all are, especially in our like 20s or 30s are feeling like, man, like home was like when I was a kid and my mom was making dinner and I was watching yeah. TV on the couch, you know, and like, that's what home feels like. But at some point in life, home is going to feel like wherever we presently are, or it's going to feel like, oh, like I've lived with Allie for 20 years now. Like this is truly the only home I should feel because I've spent more time here in this present moment with her than I have ever, you know, with my parents or whatever. Like I only lived with my parents for 18 years of my life or whatever, right? Like eventually you're going to move on and home is going to become something else. And it's just, it's an interesting moment. I don't have any, like, I don't, an endpoint or a conclusion to this thought other than that. I find it really fascinating that home adapts and Finn has to realize that, like, and I think he does in this moment, because he stops his search and he goes home and he hangs out with his family and he lives the rest of his life as an awesome mm-hmm. father for his kids and stuff, that, like, he's living in his home presently. And it's not this past that yeah. he had for 10 years of his life, maybe, or whatever, you know. And it wasn't one point, but he can't just get stuck on that. Like if you're doing that, you're missing out on the future or your current life entirely. Like you're so stuck. Like I get so stuck on nostalgia, you know. And yeah. I'm trying to like get past a little, like I love nostalgia, I think. Especially like Pokemon, right? Like, or yeah. Adventure Time. Like, this is all a form of nostalgia for a lot of people. Yeah. And I think that's great. And I think there's a place for it. But it's a point where I'm trying not to spend too much of my time every day living in nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you're bringing up such a good point in Adventure Time aspect here, like with this story specifically, because I have some more like deep thoughts I'll say in just a second, but it's like also with our real lives as well, is what you're really hitting on is that it's incredibly hard to live presently because it is second to second is the present. As soon as that second's gone, it is,
yes.
You can be nostalgic about 5 minutes ago. Now on the flip side too, you can worry about the future, which I think is a little of what this episode is also getting on as well. It's like the festering aspect. And so if you really look at the middle part, like Finn has this beginning phase of his life in Pillow World where he's got kids and he's happy and it's because he's like living in the present. Then as soon as the Pillownomicon comes back up, he festers on his past for years and years and years, and his family supports him with that because they're wonderful, a good example of a family. But he wasn't necessarily living his best life. I think he looks more aged and rugged after all that because of maybe like the stress and toll that put on himself, essentially, that he spent those years festering over something that was, like you said, nostalgic in his past. The pursuit of gaining that feeling again or gaining that old life again. And he's not truly happy until he, I wouldn't even just call it like, let's go, but like essentially going, oh, the answer to what makes me happy, it has been in front of me the whole time. And so that's where I'd say like the happiness, maybe the lesson here is kind of like happiness is when you can be at peace with your current situation, you know, that yeah. Even though he misses Jake or he misses his past or he's curious about it or nostalgic about it, we see Pillow World Finn absolutely at his happiest when he is at peace in the present. And that's kind of like, we jumped to the lesson gun already. I didn't mean to do that.
But the whole episode's lessons.
Peace in the presence is it. And I think that's where, you know, getting back into our world picture, that it's a flip side of a coin. We can be not happy in this world when we're worried about the future. We're worried about the next job, the next paycheck, the next house, the next mortgage payment. What am I going to get next? I'm worried about I'm paying the next bill. And you spend that much time thinking about the future and festering on the future. But then also at the same time, like what you were saying, that where you struggle more is festering on the nostalgia, and that it's even less about like, there's a lot of great lessons about, I'm not worried about the future. Like I'm cool with wherever it takes me, but you can also end up festering way too much on the past, which also takes you out of that peace in the present moment, you know?
And maybe that's a really good example or like a really good contrast between this story and The World Inside a Pillow, where The World Inside the Pillow, the man is like festering on the fact that he doesn't have these things. He doesn't have a like prestigious life and lots of money and this awesome job and all these things. And Finn is focused on his past and where his past didn't take him. And Jake doesn't, he says the lesson of the episode essentially like early on, right? But it doesn't fully hit all the notes. I think it's an interesting metaphor that he paints. And I'll just say the quote real fast because I know everybody probably has this one memorized. Yeah. And it's probably like the most like clipped moment of this episode. But Jake says, you're hung up on imaginary problems. You got to focus on what's real, man. You see this cup? This is literally my favorite cup. Now it's gone forever. And so it's not real. And I don't care about it anymore. And that's not how that works. And we even see Jake later in this episode fish the cup back up.
He goes and fishes the cup back out, which I think that's a huge important part of this episode because it's kind of like him going, yeah, it's simple to say that. It's simple to say these lessons, whatever, even what we've said. It's not simple to act them out. It takes a lot of discipline and support and loving people around you to constantly, what he said may be true and maybe the kind of source of finding peace and finding happiness, but it's really hard to, you know, it's the actions are a lot harder than just words, you know?
Right. Well, it's not like that cup never existed and it will forever, even if you didn't go fish it back out, like it will forever always exist within Jake. And I think that's important to keep in mind about the past and the things that we might fester on is that like, just because they become hazy and because it's harder to think about things doesn't mean like those things weren't real. You know, it doesn't mean that those things don't have importance or matter. And I was kind of jokingly, just so crazy, ironically, I broke my favorite mug this past week. Like kind of really weird that we would watch this episode and that happened.
That is a end of an era. That's as simple and materialistic as that is. You're like, that's the end of this era. I'll never drink out of that mug again, you know?
This mug, so I was making tea and I put the water in way too fast. And I've been using this mug for 8-9 years. It was a All Good Pest Solutions mug, which is the family company, or was, it's sold. It's not a thing anymore. And so it meant a lot to me because it was nostalgic. It was this thing that my family built and I was so proud of. And I loved using that mug. Also, it was like, I love mugs that are double-sized mugs or like slightly bigger than, you know, 12 ounces.
I drinking out one this morning.
Yeah, because 12 ounces is never enough. but anyways, so I just love that mug, you know, and it broke. And Allie was like, oh, we can repurpose it. You know, we can use it for flowers or something like that. And I kind of think I want to get rid of it. I think it's time to move on from that. The company is not a thing anymore. The company will always be a thing within my heart. And it'll something that has inspired me to push myself to work hard, to like do a podcast and a full-time job or whatever, you know, like to do artist management in the past, like knowing that like, oh, the people that came before me grinded for a better future, and like I can do that too, and if I want, you know, like. And funny enough, another lesson from The World Inside a Pillow, that story is that like I think it's Taoism, but it's like it's not about materialism, maybe it's not about money, it's just about like living presently and being happy with what you have. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a contrast to what I'm saying in a sense, but the mug mattered to me, but now that it's broken and I can't use it, I'm okay with not having it anymore, because it's never going to leave my mind. And I was talking with my uncle a while back about the history of our family, something I've always been very interested in. Mm-hmm. And it blew me away. And I may have mentioned this on the podcast. He had no interest in it at all. His focus is entirely, and he's now a grandfather, right? And he's got several grandkids. His focus is entirely the present moment, and then where his family is going, and making sure that they're okay, making sure that they'll be good for the rest of their lives. And he had no interest of even discussing, oh, did we come from Ireland? Did we come from Scotland? You know, like, did the Tyndalls go down to Dublin, Georgia? And then, you know, like, not interested. It doesn't matter to him. He's totally just... presently and future focused. And I kind of admire that. That's just not who I am at all. But it's something that I'd like to work on. And I think it's something to strive for. And I think there's got to be a way to bring this back into Adventure Time, because it definitely went down a tangent, y'all. And I apologize.
But. No. This is good tangent. This is absolutely, because like, I mean, I think what you're striking is different theories of thought, but I think that you can't ignore any of them, and you can't dive too deeply into any of them, because again, the thing that I think with your grandfather or your uncle that was doing this?
My uncle.
Your uncle. So, yeah. I mean, I think that there's a wonderful like aspect of that, of don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened. But if you never, never focus on the past, then what's the other like cliche saying? It's a history then tends to repeat itself. And so we study history and we learn about our ancestors and we learn about where we came from in order to better understand ourselves and to, again, kind of like not repeat the mistakes of our ancestors. And that's historically speaking, family speaking, whatever. But it has to find that fine, because then again, I've seen a lot of people do that incorrectly, where they focus so heavily on the future aspects that they don't live in or they focus so heavily on the present. I want to enjoy this today. I want to buy this today. The present is very important. I don't care what happens tomorrow. And then that's like very self-destructive, because you don't set yourself up for long-term success. And then there's a lot of people that don't enjoy the present because they're so worried about saving money or, you know, oh, I have to do this in the future. Oh, like, I have to meet my future husband, my future wife. And they're so worried about who they're going to meet, who they're going to be, what they're going to have, what they're going to own, that you don't appreciate anything in the present moment. So there's all this weird, and I think that's probably what you're saying is the Taoism or Taoism.
I think it was Taoism.
Yeah, the Taoist aspect is like finding that present peace moment. But I also don't think you can completely ignore the past. I don't think you can completely ignore the future either.
Let's do one more tangent real fast, and then we'll go into this episode, because I really want to talk about theories. Is this episode real? Is it an imagination? Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's a lot to get out of that. And also, like, Finn has a freaking robotic arm in Hello World as well. like he can't get away from that, dog. Everywhere he goes, he loses an arm. Poor guy. Yeah. It's just a part of his future, and a part of his reality will always be one-armed Finn. But since we're just talking about this, and I don't want to revisit it, I wanted to kind of get to like what made me tear up a little bit, like writing this down. And I'll be quick about it, or I'll try to. But I wrote like a kind of internal monologue or an internal paragraph about this feeling that I had, and a memory and a moment and a loved one. But essentially, the title of it is Fleeting Memories Like Dreams. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but it's one of the saddest parts of losing a close loved one is like how distant the details become, right? Like as time moves on, everything about them kind of, as I said earlier, kind of gets hazy. Like outside of photos, I find it increasingly more difficult to distinctly picture exactly what my mom's father looked like. And in dreams, sometimes it can be as clear as day, but then you wake up, right, and you forget those dreams or whatever. Same with like his voice is something that is the sense that really struck me in this moment. So I knew I would be able to identify his voice if I heard it in a voicemail or something like that, but I don't have any recordings, and he definitely wasn't like a podcaster, you know, like there isn't thousands of hours or hundreds of hours of him talking on the internet. So I don't have that. But several months ago, I had a dream about him. And I've never really had this before, but I woke up in the middle of this conversation with him and I was fine. And then literally a second later, like I was overwhelmed with tears. It was crazy, dude. Like I just like could not stop crying. And the reason was like his voice was so incredibly clear in that dream. Like it was exactly how he sounded. It was exactly how I remember it. But then I woke up and unfortunately, like that voice that I had heard started to fade. And like within like an hour, I couldn't even remember really like what his voice sounded like. And it was just this like unfortunate, like faded memory of just like where I was back to present, right? I was back to like where I was, where I couldn't recall how he sounds and I could barely picture him. And I just had this beautiful dream moments ago where he was as vivid as possible. I mean, it was just crazy. Like, especially his voice, like it like echoed. I felt like he said it and then like I woke up and it kind of echoed in my mind. And I just like, yeah, it just really brought me the tears. It was crazy. And it just sucks that that happens with loved ones, with important moments. And I hate that all that stuff molds over time and kind of fades away. And I think it does point to like maybe what my uncle was saying or what this episode is saying is like, we got to really just focus on the present sometimes because like my grandfather will always be within me, like my favorite mug or whatever, the memory of, you know, well, not in this episode, but Finn's family should be, right? Like if that really happened and wasn't just a dream. So I'm fortunate to have that. But it's, you know, the human mind, it's just so tricky how present is so fleeting and the past just fades. And I don't know.
Well, I mean, even from a brain, I don't mean to take away from like that being like just beautifully said and articulated too, but you know, it's even the fact that, you know, our brain, it fires neurons and then that creates like rivets in our brain that are our thoughts and our memories. And the reason why you can remember stuff and why memorization is things that happen over and over and over and over again, and they have to stay fresh, is that's where your like neural pathways go or whatever. So in the, like when you forget things or things become fleeting memories, it's because we haven't thought about them in a while. Yeah. Those paths become smoothed over. But the dream aspect of that is powerful because you're then all of a sudden your passive, what do you call it? Just like sleep brain can fire a neuron through that pathway that you haven't, that hasn't fired in 10, 15, whatever
and
odd
that's
years.
That's totally probably what happened, right?
Yeah. I think and that's why you could remember it. And it's like, then you're like trying to force yourself. Hey, I want to keep remembering. I want to like, and that's where that festering on the nostalgia takes place, is you're trying to fire that same neuron through that same pathway in your brain with this, the same dopamine release, and you can't act, you can't actually do it unless you're in this, you know, REM dream cycle, you know?
I think we just like the takeaway from that though isn't a sad one as much as it's like cherish those memories, but like I do want to do a better job of living in the present with the people that I mm-hmm. still have, you know, and like yeah. the people that are still around me. And of course, being a person of faith, like I have a feeling that like I'll be with those people in the future and I won't like forever not have them or whatever, right? Which is a hopeful, wishful, a wonderful thought that I have. But certainly currently, it is sad to think about sometimes, but I do think living in the present and moving forward is probably the best way to go about it and just loving who's around you now. But let's get back to the episode. That's, you know, glad I kept it together and kind of didn't look at my notes so that I wasn't yeah. reading what made me upset exactly. But yeah, let's get back to this episode and let's talk a little bit about reality versus imagination within Adventure Time and what we're talking about. Because I thought it was really fascinating and I know the other episode didn't win an Emmy, but you mentioned this is one of two episodes that won an Emmy earlier. And I thought for a second you were about to say what I was going to say, which is this is one of two episodes that I know of that have a raining knife scene at the beginning of it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's
it gives you the treat. So that's like my treehouse vibe itself is like this cozy yeah. aspect. They got hot chocolate in mugs and the rainy day and they're building a pillow fort, which is like, that's such a good vibe day. Like it's raining so much outside that there's literally nothing you can do besides just stay in and be cozy with the best friends in all history, as Jake puts it.
But why does Randy Knives matter? And I think that's what I want to point this to, especially is the first time we had it raining knives is Rainy Day to Daydream. And mm-hmm. this is at least the first time that Finn remembers or Jake remembers that it had lived or had rained knives. Because Finn literally says like, oh my gosh, I've never seen this before. So I think that's important. And I think it's an interesting thing to point out as well that that episode was all about imagination. It was them exploring Jake's imagination and everything that Jake was imagining was becoming real. And so like the floor was lava and then all of a sudden the floor really became lava and Finn's imagination ran with it as well. And on that episode, we really got into questioning whether or not if the knives were really there in the first place or if it was just rain that
yeah, because that episode was all about like imagination stuff. Yes. So were they really just imagining the knife storm as part of this imagination?
Or was it really happening?
Or was it actually? So it did. So we do know at least it was actually happening. So
maybe because there is a moment in that episode where they cross the bridge and Finn says, too. Hey, imagine that there's an umbrella stopping the knives from hitting us. And they do that. And so the knives don't hit them. Which leads me to think that it was just raining and their active imaginations forced them to think, or not forced them, but like allowed them to think, oh, it's knives, like it's, you know, whatever. And, you know,
you think that
the raining cats and dogs, right?
Yeah. Well, do you think that this aspect of the imagination knives plays into the fact of we've got the imagination pillow fort universe, essentially?
I think it's a good argument for the theory of this all being in Finn's imagination and not being true, right? Like, mm-hmm. let's dive into that first, and then we'll go into the counter argument of it. No, it's reality. So I think the knife storm seemingly introducing this episode as an episode about imagination and about youthful two main characters, like being deep in their thoughts. Finn is clearly distressed. He's I'm slipping up on the word. Freaking festering. Mm-hmm. He's going down a dark path. Fortunately, he has a very like happy, fun, playful imagination on this one with the pillow world, and like everything is just wonderful in the pillow world. But it could have gone a much, if this is imagination, like I said, we're playing into that, could have gone down a much deeper, darker path than that. Like you have this beautiful world and dark themes, and yet like what happens within that world is fine. You know, like it's all pretty much good things. It's not until he comes back to the real world that like it gets kind of sad because he forgets everything. Finn's the same age when he gets back, which I think plays into the theory of it being an imagination thing and not being real as well. And then, of course, Finn forgetting his pillow family as dreams are fleeting, as we forget them as we wake up. Those are kind of my arguments for maybe it never really happened and it was all in Finn's mind.
Yeah. No, and I think that there's good arguments to be made on both sides of it. The gold scene kind of messes it up a little bit.
Well, let's get into the reality then. What are all the reasons why we think, oh no, this is actually a real thing that occurred to Finn and plays into deeper themes of Adventure Time?
Well, the aspect here is, I know when we had the Enchiridion introduction, or the Enchiridion being the portal to different universes, and we get Bucco, and Bucco describes that there are temporary wormholes that can be opened up between universes, and that gets those universes on the same temporal plane. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this could be one of the instances of that occurring naturally, where all of a sudden there was this, because maybe it was whatever the frequency, all that weird multiverse stuff we've talked about, where going down the pillow tunnel, like synced up those universes' frequencies to where it was briefly connected, that gave Finn the ability to cross over, and then it was done. And so those temporal planes are no longer in sync. That way, time's happening differently, which is, again, kind of the reason that Finn can live a whole life in this universe and everything. Now, I think it is a incredibly important matchup to say he was festering. I would like to look at the parallels of Finn's like current girlfriend situation, Hot to Touch. It's like the name of one of the episodes, that he cannot even touch Flame Princess. That's kind of what he's festering on, is that I think it's over. I think we're done. She's not laughing at my jokes. We just had the dungeon episode where that we can kind of start seeing how they're not like the perfect match and everything. And I think he is festering on that. And then this universe, what could be his imagination, he is falling in love with.
It sounds like an argument for imagination. Bro. Yeah,
exactly. So, but I'd say it lines up perfectly to where when he's in the world, you're like, oh, of course this is imagination. He's got this girlfriend
as opposed to reality,
soft to touch, and this everything is fluffy and nothing is hard. And
she's not.
He's imagining
anger and stuff.
Yeah, imagining a world where he doesn't have to think about and worry about the problems of monsters and flame princesses and old heartbreaks and confusing Marceline episodes, whatever it might be.
Yeah, yeah.
But the end of it all, he passes away after living this great life. He has like a DMT experience, which is like the weird kaleidoscope. That's everybody that does DMT says they see the same shapes, kaleidoscopal, whatever you want to call it. But he ends up flying towards Golb. And again, we've never seen this. This is something that I don't think would be in Finn's imagination. And ultimately, is this Finn actually potentially about to like die? That, you know, Golb is the agent of chaos in all the, you know, he's not in the universes, but he's the agent of chaos watching all these universes. And he has a moment where, similar to what happens later on, he could be just eaten by Golb. Golb's mouth is open, tongue stuck out, and Finn like yeets himself off of it. And Golb sits there and turns around to watch Finn, which I read something about that's really important, that like Golb is so chaotic. Like, why would Golb care about anything? But he does turn and watch Finn. And my theory is that what we have yet to come with Fiona and Cake, and with the episode that returns back to Farm World and returns back to the Lich. I'm not going to spoil too much, but there's some more chaotic actions that Finn does in that episode specifically that causes more chaos with the Lich across multiple different universes. So my theory is that this is real. Finn's actually about to die. Like I don't know, in that universe, and Golb actually lets him go because Finn actually will cause more chaos across all of the multiverses due to his actions, and Golb lets him live because of that. I don't know if that's like,
I like that.
Yeah, so that's why it does support, like, oh my gosh, it's ironic that everything would be leading up to it being a perfect imagination, the learning, festering, this is what Finn festered on. But that one little Golb scene goes, oh, like that's actually
brings it into
way
reality.
More real. Yeah.
Yeah, I think totally. And also the moment of Finn fully accepting his new life to me feels like a moment that would be like as he dies. And he kind of does a little bit before that, but on his deathbed, he's definitely fully in on it. That seems to me like why the portal maybe reopened and allowed him, as opposed to, and I like what you're saying, actually, now that you're talking about him dying, and that is him literally dying and not him going through the portal. I guess I interpreted it as he's fully accepting his life finally as he's dying in the pillow world, and that opened the portal and allowed him to go through to his actual present reality within the land of Ooh. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Yeah, you got me a little twisted on those thoughts. Now I'm not so sure about it. But I don't know. And I also saw some theories about perhaps Golb is going to destroy or eat the pillow world, which I don't know why that would be, like what the end result of that would be, or the purpose of that would be.
I think, I think that there was a thought essentially that, I'm trying to say, like, think about how to say it without spoiling anything, but with a minor spoiler drop, Finn, the Lich is not defeated. You obviously like know that too,
of course, because of
Fiona and Cake. And you do know that the Lich is existing in all these multiverses.
It should have been
right?
in the pillow world as well. I don't know why we didn't see the Lich there.
If there's a theory that Golb lets Finn live because he is going to cause what hasn't happened yet in that plane, he is going to cause the Lich to be spread across all these, not necessarily infinite in this world, whatever, they're just multiverses. He lets Finn live, but then he's going to go destroy
and mess up the pillow world
because it was maybe one of these it might have been one of these universes where
that's sad.
Somehow it was protected or unfazed or had a universe that there was no Lich, and so it's too perfect, and so Golb is going to go cause chaos in that universe now. So
yeah,
maybe Finn being there was protecting it in some sort of cosmic way, that Finn's presence there.
Or maybe his presence to that place caused the chain reaction that was...
Yeah, like Golb turned his attention to Pillow World and saw that, oh, this is too... Mm-hmm. It's not chaotic enough. And once Finn leaves, I'm going to go cause chaos. That's an interesting thought. I don't know necessarily what it would serve the purpose for in like the Adventure Time story.
I think my other thought about like this potentially being reality, especially with like my portal theory about him dying, going back through the portal, right? Mm-hmm. Is we saw in Fiona Cake, and I know this is reaching out to the future, but that a universe can live independently within someone's mind. So maybe Pillow World is a place, a universe that is within the curve that does exist for a purpose, or like as a, what do they call it in Fiona and Cake? Like legitimate universe or whatever.
That does serve the purpose of both of our theories, that like Finn opens a portal to a universe in his own mind, which is why previously,
maybe
he portals into
something.
This universe from his festering. He lives there. Golb doesn't let him die and lets him go back to his original body. But Golb eats that universe because he realizes that it's a universe that he can cause chaos in. So he just destroys it.
I like it.
It was like too pure, too perfect.
I like it.
And that's why Finn can't remember it. Finn immediately just goes, oh, I don't remember what happened. Because Golb maybe destroyed it in Finn's head, you know?
Dang. I'm sure there's a Fight Club metaphor there as well for destroying something beautiful.
It's true. It's the fun part now. This is why I was so excited for us to get to season 5, though. Because once we get to these episodes, we can debate and read Reddit threads and have other people argue with us. So, again, these are our theories. Please write us in on the Never Ending Adventure email, the Traveler's Log. What are your theories? What did we miss here? Like we probably didn't see everything that we could possibly see here.
There's no way. Yeah. NEA.travelerslog@gmail.com. No, there's a B plot. There is a B plot in this episode. We didn't talk much about it. It's just Jake and BMO. They're hanging out.
Yeah.
Jake fishes his mug. It's his favorite mug. Clearly he still cares about it. It's hard to get over situations, blah, 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 as we talked about. BMO has this awesome rainbow afro wig that he's hanging out with Jake Smug, who also has an afro wig. Don't know why, but it's also wonderful. And then BMO and Jake have a moment together about Jake's kids, and it was a little sad. So I did want to mention it. But yeah.
Jake, well, I think it was it plays into what Finn's experiencing slightly as well. So
he's not festering on it on his kids and what upsets him, which is that Rainicorn kids grow up really fast. And he can't play with his kids like he's playing with BMO because they don't need him anymore.
Yeah.
And then they have hot chocolate and it's kind of sweet. I sure hope Jake, you know, he broke BMO's favorite window in this episode. And that's a little sad. I hope he doesn't break anything important or pop anything important to BMO in next week's episode. That would really be heartbreaking, that jerkwad.
And I think that was I think it's BMO's favorite window because like that's how BMO talks to football a lot of the time is through like reflections. Yeah. And so I think you do see in the Dirt Holes episode that BMO is talking to football in I think that specific window. So but yeah, I'm with you. It's a funny like parallel that BMO and Jake end up talking about Jake's children, and he was like, yeah, like after a few hours, like Rainicorn children don't need their father anymore. And I think that that's kind of that moment that we kind of even harped on, that, you know, Jake didn't live in the present with his children, or remember he like super freaked out and then it was over. Their childhood was over. And I think now he's maybe dwelling on that, or he tries to ignore it a little bit. And then when he does remember it, it makes him sad. So how in the world does he balance out? Like, I have kids and I love them, but every time I remember that I have kids, it makes me sad because they didn't really like have a childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's just hope he treats BMO, who's not really his child, but a little bit better. Also next week we're talking about BMO Lost. So
yes, we have the first, well, besides BMO Noir, which is kind of, you know, is fun and goofy. This is like another BMO long adventure. I think that's a little bit more serious than BMO Noir. So we're going to be excited to talk about that one.
Yeah, and Jake definitely doesn't do anything that upset BMO in that episode. Not that we've watched it already. We did. We're about to record it after this one. Y'all, thank you so much for joining us this episode. Ned, I don't think we need to do lessons because I feel like this whole episode was lessons.
I had my different phrasing of all the lessons I said was a good way to cheese it up a little bit at the end. Was life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Okay.
So okay, Ferris Bueller. It's a good way to put it in a fun, not so deep way anymore.
It is. Well, hey, check us out. If y'all want to support us or want to see my reaction to this episode, like I'm basically just watching the episode, pausing, recording, and so on and so forth until we finish. And then me and Ali kind of talked about it a little bit and summarized my thoughts. It was really fun. And we did it with, Marcy and Simon recently when we watched that episode as well. But patreon.com/neverendingadventurepodcast. We also have the NEA and Beyond podcast on there for anyone that subscribes, and a Discord that is always popping. And that's where we got our year theme from, 2024 Get Out Explore, which one, I don't know if we announced that on this podcast. Maybe we did. Last time we recorded was like a week or two ago.
Yeah, so. I think we mentioned it. Yeah.
We did? Okay, good. Instagram at Never Ending Adventure Podcast, TikTok at Never Ending Adventure Cast, Twitter at NEA_podcast. Email us your thoughts, your opinions, nea.travelerslog@gmail.com. Ned, what is your rec for this episode?
Ooh, it might be overly done, especially if you're on social media a lot recently, but Dune 2 was phenomenal. Yeah.
It's good.
We went and saw it and like drove out to Mall of Georgia, IMAX, Dolby, like whole nine yards, like mega IMAX
whole
screen.
Whole nine yards.
Dude, it was... And we had just watched the movie. Every time I watched the first movie again, I think I'd seen it like three or four times, I'd pick up more about like the universe and the politics and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, like this is, I hated the first Dune movie the first time I saw it because I was like, everything happened too fast. I don't know what the fuck's going on. All that stuff.
The ending kind of sucked. Yeah.
Ending kind of sucked.
Not an ending. It's just the next movie.
Yeah. It's like literally bleeds into the next movie. And then this one, again, we were so excited to go see it and it did not disappoint, except for the fact that it was 2 hours and 40 minutes long. It still felt like it was super rushed. Like they jumped from scene to scene really quickly. And I was like, how in the world have I watched like 6 hours, 5 hours of these two movies? And I'm like begging for them to slow down and give me more. Like it's crazy.
Yeah. And it's kind of an Anakin Skywalker feeling story, which I'm sure is what influenced Star Wars in a lot of ways.
They said that was a heavy influence. George Lucas took a lot of Dune, the book influence into some of the Star Wars movies.
Lots of other things as well. Here's one thing though. Anakin Skywalker would have freaking hated Dune. He would have hated that planet. Too much sand. Yeah. Way too much sand for him.
I hate sand.
What's
your recommendation?
My recommendation is going to be the live action Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Everybody's been saying they've been doing a really good job. Yeah.
I'm not saying it's amazing. I don't know if I would say, like, if you're new to that show or One Piece and you want a live action to watch, I think the One Piece live action was better in my mind. But the last episode is kind of what won me over a little bit with Avatar: The Last Airbender, just because the graphics are so good and it's so fun to see the airbending and waterbending in such an epic and big proportions now, that it
deserves.
Are
they doing it like episode to episode? Is this a one season, like let's wrap up all four seasons in one season type show, or they're doing season one is parallel
to season
one? Season
per season, like, yeah.
Okay, that's
I'm
okay.
Pretty
that,
positive.
That's better.
I can't remember where the end of book one, which is how they refer to the seasons, ends in Avatar: The Last Airbender, but I'm pretty sure it's with that fight at the Northern Water Tribe, but I'm not entirely sure. I would say, Ned, for you, if we ever do talk about it, probably don't watch it, but it was good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm not going to watch the new one until I do the cartoon, and I'm not going to do the cartoon and until maybe I don't want to start a third podcast on
one day we'll finish this podcast and we'll see if we still are inspired or I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But regardless, the eighth episode, I will say this. I have a qualm. Spoilers, I guess. Aang's whole personality, his whole thing is like, I don't want to kill people. Like, I'm not going to kill the Fire Lord. Like, I'm not, because he's a monk, essentially. He's an air nomad. He doesn't want violence. He hates that aspect of like his job and struggles with it a lot throughout the show. But in the eighth episode of this live action, he straight up throws two fire. And this is like one specific example. Before he gets into the Avatar state or whatever, right? He throws two Fire Nation soldiers over a ship in icy water. And I'm just like, dog, what do you think happens when you do that?
Exactly. Okay.
Like, what do you think happens when you throw a soldier into icy water? Like,
that's my Batman thought, dude. Yeah, like Batman's like, I don't kill people, but like I'm like, you're throwing guys off of buildings. You're like punching them in the throat. Like that's gonna kill people. Like people are not invincible. Like killing people is not just shooting them with a gun. Like they can die a lot of other ways.
I don't kill people, and then like punching someone square in the throat is just like such a ridiculous like. Even if you're not killing that dude, you just cause so much harm.
Like he might as well be dead.
He might as well be so, for like the next 30 minutes or an hour or two. So
there's some other video game that I've played recently too. That's like, oh, well, you don't kill civilians, and I'm like, yeah, but like if you accidentally drive a truck and it blows up into the side of this building,
chances are a civilian's gonna die.
Oh, and Batman, like, oh, I'm gonna go like drive through the streets and like crush all these police cars, and then they're chasing me, and I like am causing those police cars to like blow up and flip. And I was like, okay, you probably just killed a policeman, or like you're crossing your fingers that he didn't die. Like Jesus Christ.
What crazy calculations is Batman doing in his mind when he's driving for his life?
Exactly. So I don't know this. And then with Aang though, at least Aang has the excuse of like, I'm a kid, I wasn't thinking about those things.
Yeah,
I wasn't thinking about the repercussions of my actions.
Well, he's fortunate too, where his power isn't fire, his power is water, or sorry, air. I mean, his power is all of them, let's be honest, he's the Avatar.
Yeah. But it starts with the air and then
it starts out with him just being a master of air. And so he's kind of just pushing things around. Air is not, and I have other qualms with this show, but it was good enough. If you like Avatar, watch it. If you're like waiting to hear someone talk about whether it's good or not, if you're a fan of the show, you'll enjoy it. There are things that change, but whatever, that's just how it works. Hold on. Oh, Ali just said that she got my joke. Cool.
I'm good. Oh, great.
Yeah, Ali just got my joke. All right, y'all.
No need to fester on it longer.
I guess I don't need to fester any longer. Hey, y'all, let's have a good day. Get out and explore.
Get out and explore. Explore more.
Explore more. And just, you know, eventually they'll get your joke. Even if they don't right away. That's what I learned.
They don't. Just don't fester on it. Live in the
party
moment.
Forever.
Oh, I love Dracula.